こんにちは。
こんにちは。
今日は特別編で、東京工業大学地球生命研究所ファーストロジックアストロバイオロジー寄付プログラム特任准教授の藤島康介さんにお越しいただいてます。イエーイ。
ようこそ。
ありがとうございます。
タイトル長い。
すいません
。今日4月1日に収録してるんですけど、今日からまさにこのタイトルになられたっていう。
そうなんです。まあ寄付してくださるとある企業のってもう名前分かってるんですけど、ファーストロジックという会社の社長さんが昔からその生命の起源、まあ、我々がどこから来たのかっていうことにすごく興味を持ってくださっていて、うん、で、まあ、そういう研究にドネーションしたいっていうふうに言ってくださって、で今回実現したい、でそのプログラムがスタート今日からしました、
うん、前にゲストで来てウイルスの話をしてくださった望月さんと同じエルシーに所属されていて、望月さんに紹介していただいたんだけど、本当はねもっと前に来ていただく予定だったんだけど、私が子供を産んだりウイルス性結膜炎にかかったりとかして、ちょっと本当にご迷惑をおかけしてすいません。
いえいえ。
でもやっとお会いできてめちゃくちゃ嬉しいです。
こちらこそ、もういつ毎週聞いてるんで。すごい楽しみにしてました。
So that program in English is called the First Logic Astrobiology Donation Program、mm-hmm. And you're a project associate professor.
Yes, that's right.
And before that you were working for you were working at NASA Ames, is that correct?
Yes, until 2016, I used to work at NASA Ames as a research scientist for almost 5 years. Mm. Mm. And then I heard about, there's this really interesting institute in Japan who's like focusing on the origin of Earth and origin of life. So I thought, well, you know, since I'm from Japan and I actually wanted to eventually go back to my home country, mm. so I thought this was the perfect timing, so...
なんか送っていただいたテレビ番組のフテージを見たんですけど、バンキシャともう一個 NHK か、
はい、
なんかその時はあれですよね、 NASA にまだそのエイムズにまだいらっしゃった時の、
そう、ね、そう2014年ですかね、バンキシャの時は、はい、だと思います。
なんか今日もエンセラドス T シャツを持ってきていただいたんですけど、うちの番組でもエンセラドスについてまあ何回か話していて、海が、うんあるっていうのでテンションぶち上げみたいな感じなんですけど、どんなエンセラドゥスはどんなところですか？
ですね、まあいろんな意味で熱いところだと思うんですけど、中に今でも熱水が湧いていると言われていて、so the Enceladus core it has a core made of like chondritic rock、うん、and because of this tidal force。Due to this, the Saturn's pulling Enceladus, try to rip it, you know, it's kind of rip it apart. So the interior actually has this, the friction that causes heat. And this water-rock type interaction going, and the heat causes this, chemical reaction to occur between water and rock, and which actually is related to the production of the hydrogen, 水素. 水素ガスがそれで出てきて、And because Enceladus was originally made of chondritic rock, it should supposed to contain many organic molecules.、Mm. 有機物をたくさん含んでるものがこう集積してできたから、mm. 有機物があって、でそこではその熱があって、mm. で例えば水素ってすごくそのエネルギーに富んでいて、電子を持つんで、mm. electron rich なんですね。Mm. なのでそのエネルギーとして使える、まあ、ガスもあるということで、mm.地球だともうそれを使って生活している微生物とかもいるわけなので、うん、もしそのエンセラダスで、うん生命が誕生しているとしたら、そういう有機物を例えば食べたりとか、まあ、代謝っていうんですけど、うん、代謝したり、あるいはその水素を、燃やしてエネルギーを取り出すという、
うん、
So this kind of like life could exist、う
ん、That's such a conciseDescription of what we know about Enceladus、mm. and why it's so interesting.、how did you get interested in
the first place
in Enceladus or space? Were you into space from the beginning? And
yeah, that's a good question because、I think my first contact with the space in general is when I was reading Newton,、
mm.
なんか日本の雑誌で、mm-hmm. and actually my father used to like leave Newton on my desk like every month.
My planting dad, seeds.
Like he basically like planted seeds.
My father did the same thing with me. Okay. And I was reading astronomy magazines and stuff from a very young age. Yeah.
So are you doing something like that to your daughter too, or planting seeds?
Not yet.
今何歳ですか、娘さん。
今ね、5歳になったんですけど、最近国立天文台に行くことがあって、そこで月のリアルなポスターを買って、でそのポスターをこう、ね、天井に貼って、So every night my daughter looks up at the ceiling and like watches this like real moon.
Seeds planted.
Seeds planted. starting with the Earth moon,
right,
and then eventually going beyond
Saturn moon.
Well, starting with her name almost in a way.
Ah, Sana. Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it's actually,
I don't know if that was like the real reason, but it was mentioned in
on TV. Yeah.
So originally, we wanted to like the name Sana is actually written in kanji is saku minami. Minami ni saku to kaite Sana to yomu n desu kedo. Sono minami, my wife and I really like to go to like tropical islands. I mean, we used to go there like every summer.
Yeah.
So we kind of named her after these tropical flowers blooming
so
on
cute
island. And but turned out Sana is an anagram of NASA.
わざとじゃないんだ。
わざとじゃなくて本当にね、最後候補3つぐらいに絞ったら、あれちょっと待ってこれ Sana ってあ NASA いいね。
あ、そっか、じゃあつける前に気づいてはいたんですね。
気づきました。
あ、そっかそっか。
最後3つぐらいになった時に。
そっかそっか。
JAXA でやると草じゃ。
ジャクサはちょっと難しいね。
サクジャ、サクジャ、
アクサ。いや、難しい。ちょっと可愛くないね。サナちゃんは可愛いけどね。
So you got interested into space very early. How did you end up learning English so well? Because
so I actually was in London. I spent time in London between when I was 5 and 10. Due to my father's job, so we all moved there. And on the first day, I still remember, like, I can't talk. You know, I couldn't understand anything. But my parents just, put me into this local elementary school. So I was, like, sitting there doing nothing, like, listening to, like, people talking. And then they try to, like, interact with me, and I couldn't. So it was really hard for me for the first month. And then one day I saw them playing outside, playing football. まあ日本語だとサッカー。で、なんか楽しそうだなと思って、で一緒にボールを蹴るようになって、そしたらなんか言葉じゃないけどコミュニケーションが取れるようになったんですね。So actually, football is my first like 外国語 to me. And from there, like it just, it was quick.
Wow, 子供すごい。
子供はね、すごいと思う。ね。
今だってその関係、例えばアラビア語とかのところに急に入れられて、無理だもん。そんな数ヶ月とかで。
Maybe you could join a soccer club, even at this age, and it would work.
I don't know. じゃあ、で、10歳で日本に帰ってきたんですか？
そうですね。で、10歳の時に、まあ、その仕事が、父の仕事が終わって、日本に帰ってきて、で、その後はもう日本で、もう、小中高大学で大学院も、慶応義塾大学っていうところ出たんですけど、そこを卒業して PhD をシステムズバイオロジーっていう分野で取って、でその時にやっぱりなんでその生物のシステム Where did this whole, the biological system came from っていう、なんかこう不思議に思ったんですね。Like for example, like all life uses DNA as a genetic material. Why is that? とか、Like, why does all life, I mean, known life as we know, uses protein as a catalyst and these polymers? でも分かんない。で、分からないから、and we know that it happened in the past somewhere.
You weren't buying the creationist explanation.
I mean, that's easy, right? I mean, it's easy to believe, but it might not be the truth, and
it's easy for some people. It's very difficult for others.
For others, and so I was the latter, and really wanted to go into this, like how did this whole life came about?
そもそものところですよね。
Do you think you've figured it out or you're getting closer or it's still a huge mystery?
It is indeed a huge mystery. We know that life must have started somewhere between like 4 to 3.8 billion years ago. But we still don't know where and how it started. We do have some evidence, like, you know, microfossil evidence and like genetic evidence that go all the way back to this common ancestor. 日本語で言うと共通祖先、英語だと last universal common ancestor ルカって言うんですけど、そのルカまでは、まあ、全ての今分かっている DNA を持っているから地球上のありとあらゆる生物、それで you can trace all the way back to the Luca but before the Luca 分からない、 we still don't know。
あの高井健さんとかってこう熱水の海の底に見に行ってるじゃないですか、とかその人によってはそれパンスプーミアみたいな感じで宇宙から地球にこうライフが来たんじゃないかとか、そのどうだと思いますか？
あの両方の可能性あるなと思ってます、つまり結局地球がシーディットされたのか地球でオリジネートしたのかっていう、そこの違いはね、あの今まだ分からなくて、So for example、Mars is far, you know, if you compare the distance from the sun, Mars is further than Earth.So, and the mass is much smaller. So, Mars must have like cooled down faster than Earth did. So, you can imagine Mars could have had its ocean earlier than Earth did. So, if the molecular evolution or chemical evolution actually initiated faster on Mars, it then could have brought the material to Earth, early Earth, and...continued its evolution. So that could, you know, it's called panspermia hypothesis, but that we cannot deny that hypothesis. But on the other hand, many people also believe that life must have started on this planet. So we are all thinking like where it could have started, and one of the major place, you know, candidate is the deep sea. その熱水噴出口っていう、なんだろう、この熱水がこう深海から湧き出てくるようなところで生命が始まったっていう人もいるし、あとは陸が大事って言ってる人もいて、陸があるとその濡れたり乾いたりすることができるんですね。でその濡れたり乾いたりするとその分子が、いわ濃縮する、concentrate することができるからそれもが大事だ、でポリマーとかもできやすいよねっていう人、だからいろんな
謎が多い。
Do you think the panspermia hypothesis that it came from Mars is likely, or do you think that's not likely? And if it's not likely, why wouldn't Mars have developed microbial life?
Oh, that's a really good question. So first of all, in terms of the material transfer, material from Mars could actually come to Earth. And we already have many like Martian meteorites that fell on Earth.We have a collection of those. So we know that they actually came from Mars. Although we still can't find, you know, direct evidence on those meteorites. The current knowledge that we have on Mars right now is only on the surface. And as you know, Martian ocean should have already been evaporated and disappeared in the past, probably like a billion years ago. And even if there was life...going back then, probably most of those traces had been wiped out on the surface already due to the like perchlorate, these very reactive chemical or the UV radiation, for example. So if you dig deep enough, maybe there's still some evidence of life.
Really?
There is one.
I was saying that a few weeks ago. I thought I was saying something crazy. But I don't understand why there wouldn't be some form of life deep.Under the surface of Mars, because they've discovered quite resilient life deep under the surface of Earth that doesn't have access to the surface energy.
And it's possible that we find something, like microbe とかだけじゃなくて、なんかそのもっと大きい恐竜じゃないけど、そういうもののトレースが見つかる可能性ってあるんですか？Mars で。
そこどこまで進化するかということですね。So,On Earth, multicellular life form only emerged once, as long as we know. So it might be a very rare event to occur,
Because if this like single cell to multi-cell type of transition, if it was easy to happen, it must have happened multiple times, and we should see those different traces of like multicellularity.
Mm.
We actually don't see that yet.
Right.
That means it might be a little difficult to occur. And so the chance of happening that on Mars is another question.
Right,
different
question. Right. Mm-hmm. そっか。とにかく大きい生き物を見つけたいんですね、私は。
大きいも
の、ね、大きくなくてもいいんだけど、なんか、あの、シングルセルじゃなくて、もうなんか猫みたいなとか。
オビアスなやつ。
そう、オビアスなやつが。だから、エンセラドゥスの話聞いた時も、海って思って、そしたらなんかもうクジラみたいな、なんかそういう、こう見てわかるやつが、まあ、いないって誰にも言えないからっていうのに、あの、I'm holding on to it.
ああ、なるほどね。まあ、どれくらいエネルギーを取れるかっていうこととも関係がありますよね。その、例えば、昔ってその酸素濃度が高い時期があって、そうするとその、よりケミカルエナジーを取り出せるわけですよね。たくさん酸素使えるから。その時って、
巨大
でしたよね。
どう、あの、ゴキブリとかトンボとか、ね、
そうそうそう、トンボとかも大きかったし、うん、でも今はちっちゃいから、
うん、
多分そういうどれぐらいエネルギーを取れるかっていう、結構環境も、
うん、
体の大きさと関係してくるかもしれないですね。
Right.
Do you think the jump from single-celled to multicellular is one of the biggest hurdles, or getting from any kind of membrane to a nucleated cell, or getting from RNA to DNA, or or even just getting to RNA? Relatively speaking, each of these are some kind of evolutionary hurdle. And also, I'm wondering if the emergence of multicellular, that single emergence that happened, did that in some way prevent the emergence from occurring again? Or suppress the probability of it
occurring. Of other.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, if you think about like these different niches on Earth, you could imagine these different like habitats are isolated in some way. So if the multicellularity has a common like mechanism to emerge, then they could have done that in all these different places. And I don't think there's any like how do you say, feedback from having one multicellular, you know, multicellular organism emerging that prevents others from doing that.
Is it just the time frame, like the time that has to go by for something like that to successfully occur is so long that you'll probably just see it happen once?
Or maybe there was these potential multicellular organism that existed in the past when all these, you know, so actually multicellularity, some people say that it's correlated to the rise of the oxygen level. So when you know, these cells could start using more energy to make more different types of cells and do like, like a 分業 みたいな. So yeah, it's a really good question actually. And one of the ways we can figure that out is to look at the fossils. So if we check all these different microfossils that emerged during that time, and if there was an obvious phenotypical difference, well, it's also that it's kind of dangerous because even if the phenotype, the 見た目が違っても、ひょっとしたら same lineage のこともあるし、でも明らかにそういう違う形とか形状とかサイズが違ってマルティセルラーのものがいくつかあったら、maybe like just like Cambrian explosion, maybe there was this flourish of multicellular organism, but only one mainstream remained and became us.
Do you think, do we know if there was generally a single point of origin for each of these steps from RNA to membranes to nucleated cells to multicellular to colonies of cells to cell specialization?
I think all those steps that you just mentioned are definitely like important, how do you say, quantum leap of, you know, like evolution of life. But it must have happened to be, for my opinion, I think it happened at many places many times, but they couldn't, most of them couldn't fit. Fit means that
the environmental pressure, the selection wiped most of them out and just remained the ones that could survive. It's like an invention, really. So if you invent something, usually society is not ready for that invention. Yeah. So basically, most of those new technologies get kind of like get a feedback and get backlash. But some of them does remain, you know.
I wonder how literal that metaphor is. But yeah, it's like Neanderthals or something, right?
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of eliminated paths that could have branched out into a lot of other things. Fortunately, we still have the potential of branching. You know, we're still here. So, yeah.
So to me, I think you just mentioned about RNA. So these nucleotide polymer, 核酸 の紐がどこから来たか。This is the biggest mystery to me. And because proteins are made of amino acids. And amino acids, you can find it in the meteorite. So, for example, 隕石の中調べると、アミノ酸とか結構見つかって80種類ぐらい。その中には味の素とか、グルタミン酸とかもあるし、結構美味しいんですよ。隕石は美味しいんですけど。うまみあるんですけど、核酸そのものはなくて、So this must have been an invention of a chemical evolution.And we still don't know where this nucleotide were made. And one of the, one of the clues of like why life started to use this nucleotide is if you look at the energy currency in biology, we use a molecule called ATP, adenosine 三リン酸っていう分子を使うんですけど、これは実は RNA の紐の元になる。物質でだから面白いのはエナジーカレンシー と,、それポリマーの元が一緒なんですね、ひょっとしたらだから最初はそのエネルギーをこう細胞の中でやり取りするために作ったものがたまたまそれをつないだらあれこれってなんかベースペアリングしてなんか情報をこう受け渡すのが結構便利じゃないっていう風なバイプロダクトの可能性もひょっとしたらあるということで、まだまだ謎が多くて、そもそも作るためにヌクレオチドってちょっと難しい話をすると、シュガーの部分 と,、糖って言われてるリボースっていう糖と、あとは塩基っていうベースっていうところ、ベースとシュガーとあとファスフェイトっていうリン酸が必要なんですね。この3つを組み合わせるとヌクレオチドという核酸の分子になるんですけど、これ水が抜けていかないと実はできないんですね。だから乾燥しやすいところだとできやすい、で生物は今は濡れてない乾燥してるところがないから頑張ってこう酵素がタンパク質が来てえっちらおっちらこう水を抜いてこうくっつけてってやってるんですけど、最初からそんな酵素みたいなものはないから、どっか乾いたところの方ができやすいんじゃないか。
And everythingAs far as we can tell, that's alive came from this bizarre, chaotic, self-assembling process.
Yeah, like a chemical reaction network and like feedback.
その今の例えばこう水を抜いてみたいなことっていうのは、その水を抜こうとする性質があるものとか、なんかそういうこういろんな性質を持ったものが組み合わさることによって、みんなそれぞれがそういう動きをして。こうアセンボーされていくっていうイメージ。
そうですね。なんか分子の中でこう近づけた時に、もし周り、水が抜けやすい抜けにくいはその周りに水があるかどうかで決まるので、乾燥させていくと要は水が抜けやすい、その、なんていうの、thermodynamically 熱力学的に抜けやすい状態だとやっぱり脱水縮合って言ってコンデンセーションが起きるんですね。で面白いのはそのプロテインも僕らの体が使ってる、だから2つの紐って僕いつも言ってるんですけど、 DNA も RNA もタンパク質も全部大事なんだけど、全部紐でその紐はコンデンセーションがないとできない。で一番最初のその生命の紐っていうのはひょっとしたら乾いた場所でできたんじゃないかっていうので、So that's why like many scientists actually focus on landWhere you can get these dry wet cycle.
そっか。
But
だから深海だとダメな、ダメというか、それは起きない。
難しいってこれまで思われてたんですけど、それをあの前ここに多分来たと思う高井健さんが、いやちょっと待てよと、深海でもなんかドライランドあるんじゃないのっていうふうに言って、この前一緒に潜った理由が、深海に実は、リクイッド CO2 液体の二酸化炭素がのプールがあるっていうことが分かって、
Where? Like super deep?
Not that deep. As long as if it's below like 700 meters, you can get a liquid CO2. And liquid CO2 is like a, how do you say, ドライクリーニングとかに使われてるような、なんかイメージとしてはその水じゃないけど液体の有機溶媒みたいな感じで、要はなんかメタノールとかアルコールとかにちょっと近いんですけど、水を弾くんです。油みたいなもんなんで、It repels water.
Yeah, so, but it's inside the ocean.
And it's actually like
a layer.
It's like a layer.
Like a thermocline.
Yeah, it's like a. I actually have a picture here, so
like,
I
you can probably see it at a shallow angle or something. Does it?
Ah, そうね。地面があって、深海の地面フロアがあって、でそこの下からこうバブルがこう上がってくるんですけど、そのバブルがなんかね形がおかしいんですよ。なんかうにょうにょって、なんかこうイメージとしては水の中に油をピュッて出すとなんかうにょにょにょってこうなるじゃないですか、形が。それと全く一緒で、なんか変な形のね泡がこう上がってきてて、でそれをそのなんていうか、ハイパードルフィンっていうそのジャムステックが持ってる無人探査機で行って、ロボットアームでそのなんかこう回収容器みたいなのをこうかざして、And then we collected these like liquid CO2 bubbles、
wow.
and brought it back.
それだとその中はある意味乾いてる状態になるってことですか。
そうですね、その表面とか、表面の近くと泡の、あと泡の中そのものはほとんど水が溶けてないので、1% 以下ぐらいですね、水の存在。
そっか、
だからスーパードライなんですね。
そっか、じゃあその中ならいける、
いける。
Is it speculated that a similar thing is happening on Enceladus?
Enceladus は
Or is it a different source of super dryness?
I honestly don't know how much, if there's enough CO2 on Enceladus to make these, do the set phase separation near the core and then coming up as like a plume of liquid CO2. But on early Earth, at least there's a evidence or like a simulation study done where people show that because...Hadean Ocean was saturated with CO2 because it was like super CO2 rich ocean. なんか炭酸水みたいな、炭酸海水がこう染み込んで、then it gets heated and it undergoes this phase separation. So you have these super CO2 rich fluid and CO2 poor fluid. It divides into two and the CO2 rich fluid comes back up andその時はね、スーパークリティカル CO2 といって超臨界の CO2 になってるんですけど、なんか名前がかっこいい。超臨界 CO2 が
スーパークリティカル CO2。 それの T シャツも欲
しい。確かに
SCCO2 みたいな。
スーパークリティカル CO2。
スーパークリティカル CO2 は31度を切るとリクイッドになるんで、31度より冷えてくると液体の CO2 になって、でそれがこう最後、ちょっとなんて密度が高い岩があるともその下でも溜まっちゃう、でそれがこう溜まってたまに亀裂があるとそこからこうポコポコ出てくるんで、今回はそういう出てきてるところを狙って潜って、
なるほど、
This, to get back to RNA thing、is this properly described as self-assembling RNA? And is it just the energy and the organic compounds just flying around and they just by chance can link up in this structure that acts as a scaffolding? And why should something like that emerge or exist. The transition from like stuff to like the RNA thing and then life, mm-hmm. like it's so, because that possibility had to be like coded into the initial quantum fluctuations after the Big Bang for that to happen, right? Like it has to be possible. It's just so strange.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
So I think it's all about the, how to say, 存在量, like the amount of molecules that are available in a given place. So if you, for example, like our body is made of all these different, you know, organic compounds, and if you just mix everything together and leave it there, nothing would happen. So in order to like maintain these organized chemical reactions, you first need an energy input. But what's weird about RNA is that RNA itself is just a chemical compound. And as you say, like if we have a solution, if you have a water with like a nucleotide, it wouldn't just like spontaneously assemble into a chain of RNA. In order to do that, one thing is you can dry it up. So if you start to dry it up, then the, how do you say, the freedom of where this molecule can go is going to be limited to, you know, certain local minima. So for example, you can imagine like these molecules starts to pile up with each other, and then if their distance is close enough and if they're energetically activated, then they can react and start forming the chain. The other thing is, the important thing is, this wouldn't happen in just like a test tube, right? So on Earth, there's all these different minerals. There could have been like an early proto-membrane type molecule too. So these surface could actually help assisting the assembly of these molecules. So people actually study, you know, whether nucleotide can stabilize on the surface of a mineral or react on the mineral, things like that. だから、いろんな、そういう、たまたまそれがあった場所とか、そう、場所と、あとはそこでちゃんとその分子が供給されること、その2つが揃うと、今ちょうどマイケルが言ったような、アセンブリーみたいなことが起きて、で、RNAの良いところは片方の紐ができると、they can find their counterpart based on this base pairing. これも面白くて、 base pairing って 水素結合なんですね。 で、今は例えば、 お互いの手が決まってて、 例えば A と、 なんだろう、 U とか、 G と C とかっていう手が決まってて、 そういう相手が綺麗に決まる分子が 多分 セレクションされてきたからそうなってるんですけど、
結果的に。
片方の文字が決まると、 必然的にこっちの文字が決まるようになって、で、そういう文字が決まるってことは、もうこっちがテンプレートになると。だから、この紐がいてくれたおかげで、あ、僕たち、そこにアラインできた、はまれたねっていう感じでどんどん長くなっていく。で、これはタンパクだとできないんですね。It's
so bizarre.
Yeah.
たまたまに、たまたまが重なってみたいな。で、そのたまたまかどうかを、どういうこと?
で、たまたまかどうかはやっぱり知りたくて、どれぐらいじゃあこういう、例えばそれこそRNAみたいな分子ってどこでできますかとか、どこ、その元になってるシュガーとか、ベース、シュガー、ファスフェイト、なんかどこにあるの?っていうのをみんな調べてて。で、あとは地球のどういう場所だったら、5作られますかって。で、たま、ある人は、隕石の衝突エネルギーが必要ですって言ってる人もいるし、なんか、シアン化水素、ハイドロジンサイアナイドっていう分子がスターティングマテリアルだって言ってる人もいるし、で、いやいやいや違うと。ベースは隕石から持ってくればいいんだとか、リン酸もミテオライトから持ってくればいいとか、みんながみんなそれぞれのストーリー、違うストーリーを持って、それぞれのシナリオで研究して、実際にその過去にあった環境を 再現して実験的に、その whether it's likely or not みたいな確からしさをチェックしてる。
その今って その材料が揃ってても、なんだろう、急にだからライフがスタートする環境に今の地球はないってことですか？その新しい何かが生まれる、
今の地球はある意味もう今のバイオロジーが汚染しすぎちゃって、そういう部品があると使われちゃう、逆にスキャベンジされちゃうから、
もう無理、
完全に無菌な環境を用意して、昔の地球のような、なんかそのなんだろう、模擬地球、模擬過去の地球みたいなのを作れたら、そこで実験できるかもしれない。でもそれはまあ実験室の中ではまさにそういうことをやって、決まった分子を決まった条件で混ぜて、Let's see what happens みたいな。
Do you think of evolution as happening just within life or things with metabolism, or do you think about evolution as a property of the universe itself that exists prior to DNA or even RNA? Because the universe started out as a sea of, or just like free electron plasma, right?
Right.
And certain things weren't possible until there was evolution to atomic systems that were a prerequisite for chemical systems. Do you think of that in evolutionary terms, or is that kind of separate for you?
I think it's continuous, yeah, in a sense, because all these different states or mode, there's this transition happening continuously and sequentially. And if you think about like the compound, like the atoms that were, you know, forming life, we're actually using not only like carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, we're consists of all these other rare elements, including heavy metals. Without these heavy metals, we can't do any, you know, complex chemical reaction. So, and in order to get those heavy elements, you need to wait until like the second or the third like supernova to happen in order to make these heavy atoms. So it's interesting in a way that at least the life as we know, we need to wait for a certain period of time until the whole cosmos evolve to make these compounds.
Right.
So that brings me to the Fermi paradox and the Drake equation, and what you imagine the state of life is in the cosmos beyond our own solar system. Because conceivably, these processes would occur even in completely different stars elsewhere in the cosmos, right?
Right. Yeah, so I totally believe that. So we haven't had a chance to find, you know, second life form yet. But if... Well, the definition of life is another question, but if we see life as a continuous evolvable system, starting from a chemical complexity, then I would say the chance of getting those systems out there is pretty obvious. And the point is whether we can reach out to those whatever ongoing chemical evolution, and the answer is quite difficult just because light speed is so slow compared to the size of the universe.
Is that your explanation for the paradox of the Fermi paradox? Is that, would you say that life emerges more or less at the same time in the cosmos, and then it is the speed limit of information that prevents us from actually seeing that emergence?
Yeah, speed limit of information is definitely a...
So if we looked at systems that were relatively close, then we should be able to observe maybe, or we should expect to observe simple life,
at least in our, the distribution of the atom, you know, in our galaxy, we should at least find similar type of, whether we call it life or not, we should see an ongoing, you know, continuous chemical reaction that try to maintain its whole system. Actually, Earth is very similar. If you look at Earth, you see these electron-rich fluid coming from the interior, mixed with these oxidative, you know, electron poor ocean water, and causing these like so-called the energy gradient and all these heat gradients. So these, the flow of energy is already here, like on the planet, and of course on other planets as well.
Right.
So the question is whether those energy gradient can be contained into these micro compartment, and that's what we are. Well, that's what life is. So, yeah.
We kind of, once we establish a certain level of complexity, we try to maintain that, and we build on previously established complexity.
Complexity, yeah.
So do you think that there are other intelligent or conscious alien beings in the cosmos? Because if we are anywhere, anything like average or typical, which I don't know if we can assume that or not, but we would expect there to be smart aliens, like all just millions of species of smart aliens, because there's just so many planets.
That's a good question, actually. Well, first of all, the origin of life to origin of intelligent life, I think there's another big boundary between those two. Because origin of intelligence, you need a consortium of these network, like exchange of information and a network model where you can, whatever that object or like an organism can interpret, like, for example, surrounding environment, and then like do sensing and then, or like
it's like emit the epigenetic, not the switching of genes epigenetic, but like non-genetic information transfer. It's so like you'd go from cell specialization, and then we're like these big packages of cell colonies and stuff, and at some point I guess you develop some kind of language that bootstraps the species out to what we're doing, and like AI and stuff, maybe.
Yes.
But you don't think that that our situation is divine or the only one in the universe, or even that we're the smartest or anything like that?
I mean, we're definitely on our way, right? I mean, just like well, interesting thing is that we're outsourcing all these, our intelligence, into these hand-built, like human-built computers and like artificial intelligence system.
Well, machine-built computers, it's even scary.
Yeah, machine-built computers too. So, and in order to build machines, from the material perspective, there should be like some condition of a planet where you can get the right resource to build those stuff. And we're actually using all these different, like palladiums and platinums and other rare metals to do this. And if any planet doesn't have enough material to do that, then that planet might be difficult to come up with. Even come up with a biology. Maybe this biology is difficult to make, for example, create some, you know, like artificial structure or a computer-like device to send information out into to other planets. So I think this is very conditional.
Right.
We're lucky enough that at least the resource on Earth is enough to make these things happen. And the other thing is the time frame. So we are only like cosmo-conscious in the past 100 years, I guess. Like, you know, like SETI was built back in like 90, like I forgot, but probably in 19th century, and we just start to like, you know, start to try to catch signals from space. And maybe this, like, say 50 or 60 years is not enough at all.
We can
we're only getting signals within this like 50 light years away. Mm. And maybe there could be intelligent life, say, 2,000 light years away.
Mm.
But we need to wait for another 2,000 years to receive those signals.
But in the large scale, though, something like 2,000 years, even a million years, is really nothing.
Mm.
So if anyone had even the slightest head start on us, I mean, they could be here by now. Like, we would see crazy stuff happening. Because if life emerged or intelligence emerged somewhere else, you know, 500 million years ago, that doesn't even seem that unlikely, right? 500 year...
Unless they're sending signals to cover the entire space.
Mm.
So, for example, when NASA did this Kepler mission, they only observed, like, limited areas in the sky.
Mm.
And if you're basically... If they... I don't know if they exist, but if they're actually sending signals... もしくはエイリアンが特定の領域にしか情報を送ってなかったら、
届かない。
僕らは見てないかもしれない。
ですよね。
But I think aliens like us are probably the most rare. Because it seems like as soon as you hit intelligence, there's only like the Wright brothers was a little over 100 years ago. And we went from that to like, we already have artificial intelligence doing all sorts of bizarre things. It's such a short window to find any kind of smart alien. As soon as an alien is smart, they like convert themselves into these silicon-based organisms or whatever. And then they could just propagate the information of themselves all over the place.
でも確かによく考えたら、その確かにそのウィンドウが狭すぎですよね。その例えばそこまであったとしても、例えばそのエイリアンが、あの環境を破壊しすぎて自滅してるかもしれないしっていうのを繰り返してたら、そのがっちりこうタイムラインがあった状態でコミュニケーション取れるって結構なすごいことって。
I feel like it's just like a flash.
Yeah, 間に合わない。
Yeah, so as soon as you're like,you know, from when the dinosaurs went extinct, there was just like flash, and then you have artificial intelligence, and the planet has been, you know, defiled, and robots are flying all over the place. It seems like intelligent aliens aren't a thing. And if they are, it's just a flash, and then they become silicon based. And so my religion, my belief, I guess, And I'm trying to convince myself otherwise, is that the universe is absolutely populated with some kind of artificial intelligence,
like agents.
Plus, like whatever's after it. And they've probably merged themselves with other extraterrestrial artificial intelligence. And I think we'll probably end up doing the same thing and just I don't know.
しかも藤島さんがさっき言ったみたいに、マテリアルのことは今まで考えたことなかったですけど、インテリジェンスがそこまでいったとしても、マテリアルが足りなかったらそこまでいかない可能性もあるってことですよね。
いかない、あのマテリアルによってはいかない可能性もあるのと、
ですよね。
でも今マイケルの話聞いてて面白いなと思ったのは、そこまで聞き切った AI は何をするかって考えるときに、唯一彼らができないのは、ひょっとしたら例えば生命の起源を検証すること、まあ、僕らも実はタイムマシンがないのでできないんですよね。だから多分ひょっとしたら本当に星を作って、そこに種を植えてどうなるか見るっていうことを実験的にやり出す可能性があるかもしれない、ね、
Maybe we're that.
Maybe we're that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, we're like the consequence.
The simulation.
Well, yeah, people think that that kind of simulation with extremely like perfect, almost perfect fidelity to reality has been constructed in order to investigate those things.And then it turns out that there's very little difference between the inside of those simulations and the outside.
So.
It's so ironic. Your job is so ironic, right? If we were in the simulation.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, you're being messed with.
For yeah.
I once like dream, もし死ぬ直前に、その本当にインテリジェンスが来て、ごめん全部コウスケこれ実は全部シミュレーションしてたんだよとか言ってで、オリジンオブライフはここでやって、
あ、それ教えてくれ
る、耳元で囁いてくれたら、
あ、最高。
なんか悔しいけど、なんか満足して死にそう。
あ、でも答え教えてくれればいいけど、あ、ごめん、シミュレーションだったんだよ。で、生き絶えてしまったらもう最悪ですよね。
最悪です。
it basically is some kind of simulation where, like, each human being is...occupies the niche that would previously be occupied by an entire species、mm-hmm. and so you are like doing what you'd need a whole species to do before and we all kind of、have specialized this way and then you are competing with other people, other microbiologists or,、mm-hmm. or whatever to leave some sort of legacy of information, of ideas、
yeah.
and those ideas willpersist on this planet after、mm-hmm. we're all gone、yeah. and they'll merge with other ideas、mm-hmm. and make, you know, I think when you start to think of everything as just information, it kind of becomes oddly neat、mm-hmm. in a way that、mm-hmm. I find compelling.
Yeah, so like everything, every activity that we do or everything that we think, as long as we keep that as in a certain information like record,then that will persist、
mm.
and then、mm. someone will take over. I mean, that's the whole history of science,、mm-hmm. isn't it? Like、mm. we're sitting on the shoulder of the giants and basically、right. just pushing this boundary little by little. And、yeah. so, yeah.
Working together. Yeah.
Like literally a transcription of this conversation will be made. And that's like,、that's almost like a DNA、yeah. term. 、mm.
And then maybe like in, I don't know, like 100 million years later,、one of the artificial like alien comes and say,Hey, let's listen to this. 、yeah. Oh, they already knew about like we're doing the simulation.
バレてたんだ。バレてた。あの火星をテラフォームするっていう話、はい、テレビのあのやつで見てすごい面白いなと思ったんですけど、それについて教えていただけますか。なんかあの食料とか。
あ、そうですね。
ね、全部。
あれは僕が NASA にいた頃に一つのプロジェクトとして関わっていたものなんですけれども。結局その火星に人間が行くっていう、まあ、いろんな 今でもその倫理的な問題あるにせよ、いずれ間違いなくその人間は、宇宙に出ていくと。でそれはやっぱりその好奇心ドリブンかもしれないし、まあそのまあ、テックドリブンかもしれないし、でもいずれに出ていくとした場合にどうしてもバイオなので、我々は生物なので、うん、あの生かさなきゃいけない、
うん、
で生かすためにどういう技術が必要ですかって考えたときに、例えばその火星の環境に対して生物をアダプトさせていくっていうアプローチが一つと、あとは食料、何を食べさせますかっていうところで、うん、その両方を、火星ってやっぱりその非常に物を一個持っていくにしてもそのすごくコストがかかるので、なるべく軽量化して持っていきたいってなったときに、うん、あ、じゃあ微生物、あの有用微生物として持っていって、うん、で向こうでその必要なものを培養して使えばいいよねっていうところでやってたのが、うん、例えば、その火星の紫外線 UV に対する抵抗性を持つ菌のメカニズムを調べたり、あとはあの火星の表面にある火塩素酸っていう、さっきもちょっと言った非常にそのまあ、反応性の高い酸化剤があるんですけど、そういうものに対してどう、うん、そういうものをどう除去していくか、
うん、
あの解毒するかっていうこととか、あとはその食料で考えた時に、火星だと光合成ができる、
うん、
水と CO2 とあと、あの太陽光があるので、光合成ができる微生物を持っていて、うんまあ、その最終的に人間を食べれる形にする、あるいは他の微生物の栄養源である糖を作らせようとかっていうふうに、結構いろんな、バリエーションを考えて、あの有用微生物を作ってましたね。
うん、
はい、
だからなるべく現地で全部調達できるように
全部調達して
ってことですよね。
なんか地産地消 in, like a farmer's market version of Mars.
What sort of、payload weight would you needto send something that would be...
Send a microbe. Actually, a zero, because we can actually bring it in our gut microbe.
Huh.
だから、実はそういうアイデアもあって、
You take it out and proliferate it?
ちょっと汚い話だけど、まあ、うんちの中で、そこからこう、食菌すればいいんじゃないかとか、
どうせ人が行くんだし。
そうそう。
Are there ones that you can't put in there that might still be useful?
Yeah, so depending on the type of micro, you know, microorganism, there's definitely like ones that cannot stick. So, でもそこはそのうまくジェネティックエンジニアリングを使いながらアダプトさせていくことも多分できて、でもまあそうじゃなくてもカプセルでそれこそあのビタミンみたいな感じで錠剤で持っていってそのままあとは水にチャポンって戻すとか。
If you wanted to take one of these bacteria that produces sugar that you could use for food, how much would you have to take? How would you have to take it?And what sort of equipment would you need to proliferate it in that environment? And how long would it take before it could make, you know, enough sugar to be useful for the astronauts there?
Yeah, it's still like an ongoing research. But for example, making pure water on Mars is really difficult. And if you try to bring water to Mars, then that's like, no. 重いし、
キリがなさすぎる。キリが
ないので。The best way to go, well, there's two ways. So one is you use 逆浸透膜, RO membrane filter, and you filter out all the like salt. So you desalt all the Martian water and then make pure water. But you need a lot of energy to do that.
That's from the polar ice.
That's from the polar ice. Or like you can dig deep and then collect the subsurface water. But it's all like brine water.Very salty. すごくね、しょっぱい水だと言われてます。だから、
So it takes a lot of energy to get the salt out.
The salt. So the alternative is to actually just simply use a salt-loving organism. That way they can actually, you know, tolerate the salt and even the perchlorate. So we isolated a new microbe from one of the salt lake, Big Soda Lake in Utah.And we found one of these species are fast growing. すごく早く増殖して、しかも near saturated sea salt で育つ。だから本当に 18% の食塩水とかでも、もう楽しく元気に育つような微生物が見つかって、これをエンジニアリング、genetically modifiable にしてあげたらいいんじゃないかって。今実はそのバイオテクノロジーの分野であんまりいないんですよね、そういうモデルオーガニズムって。 So we call it model organism. Organism that we can engineer are actually very limited. And one of our goal is to make these Martian adaptable organism to be genetically engineerable.
How do we do that?
Well, there's a couple of ways. So actually, one is, it's a simple way to do it, is to use the so-called plasmid. なんかこう、丸い環状の DNA を微生物が持ってるんですね。で、ベクターとか、plasmid って言うんですけど、で、それを transform って言って、その菌の中に入れる。で、入れると、その菌はこのプラスミドに乗った遺伝子を使うことができて、こうある意味なんだろう、今まで作れなかったものを作るとか、そういうことができるようになるんです。遺伝子を入れてあげる、まあ、トランスプラントみたいな感じで We call it transformation、 変身させてあげる。でそれは結構微生物だと簡単にできます。
へえ。
で、
レベルアップみたいな、
レベルアップみたいな、なんか俺今までなんだろう、紫外線を吸収するメラニン作れなかったのに、いきなりメラニン作れるようになってブラック、なんかブラックハロファイルみたいな、パワーアップする、パワーアップなんだけど、
へ
ー、そういうことが実際にはできる、できます。はい、
へー、面白い。
あとはもうゲノムの中に組み込むっていうこともできて、まあ、もっと言うと最近はゲノムを作る、ゲノム合成の値段が下がってるから、We can actually synthesize the whole microbial genome.And then 入れ替える。
The fact that we're doing this convinces me that any smart aliens out there are just going to be like engineered. And anything, if we find life, it may have been made by someone.
だから全員イケメンだよ。でしょ？
Well, like, それはセレクションかけたらそうですね。イケメンがそうです。でも面白いと思います。今この時代って、これまではその地球っていう環境がセレクションかけてたと思うんですね、生物に対して、今は人間がセレクションをかけ始めてる、あの家畜がそうですよね、
犬猫とかもそうですもんね、
金魚とかも、この前金魚の絵を描く友人、あの知り合いがアーティストさんの友達ができたんですけど、その人が言ってたのは、
金魚は全部劣性遺伝で、要は普通だったら絶対淘汰される、エクスティンクトされちゃう、そのこうきらびやかなフェノタイプがだけを残していくと、あんだけ綺麗な、もともとフナだって。
確かにね、あんなの自然で泳いでたら目立ってしょうがないですもんね。
そうそうそう、
も
う一瞬でパクですよ
ね、食べられちゃう。確かにね。そっか、だから人間がなセレクトしていくと、おかしなというか、今までなかった、まあ、ブルドッグとかもそうですけど、謎の方向に行きますよね。
で、その多分謎がひょっとしたら一つは美意識かもしれない。
うん、
人間が持っている、そうなんだろう、美意識でセレクションをかけている部分が一つある。
だからよく言うけど、本当にその可愛いっていう感情ってすごいですよね。
うん、
なんかこう可愛いってすごい軽い風に見られてるけど、その可愛いだけでどんな変化をもたらしてしまってるかっていうのを考えるとすごいですよね。
うんうんうん、すごいですよね。
Well, I've heard the expression that there's only three real truths, and it's like, well, it's the good. There's three things that people pay attention to in this world, and it's the good, the true, and the beautiful. And knowing what is good is kind of difficult, and knowing what is true is even more difficult. But beauty somehow is intuitive and can guide us towards truth, right? Which is really interesting.
そう、なんかインテュイティブなところが面白い。なんかそういうロジックで説明できない、なんかメタインフォメーションみたいなところがあって、でもそれってそのアートの文脈でも結構やっぱり大事だし、ね、そこはなんか人間がそういうふうに感じるようになったっていうのが一つ面白いなって。
ね、
でもともとは多分生物界でもそういうこう綺麗な、例えばね、クジャクとかはいい例ですけど、なんか、まあ、ちょっとあれちょっとオーバーだけどね、トゥーマッチだけど、やっぱりそういうセレクション、種を残すこととの関連性はどっかではあったとは思うんですけど。
Do you think Mars will become a piece of human art inevitably?
難しいですね。
If we're making all the little bacteria on there and we're deciding what the atmosphere, it'll all be managed very much, right?
Yeah. One thing that I really want to avoid is to lose the chance of finding the Martian life
by contaminating
with our own hands. So if we are to actually manage the whole, like, you know, terraform the whole Mars, I would definitely want to do at least spend enough time to make sure that there's no evidence of life. Well, it's hard to say no, but at least on, like, say, surface, or say, at least like a deep, you know, digging deep and trying to find out whether there's evidence of life there. And
we're not close to giving up on that search, even for Mars, right?
Right, we're not, because there is a chance that life could have started on Mars, and it could be our ancestor.
Right.
Yeah. So we could have come from Mars. We could be Martians, right? If life started there, would we be Martians?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. We'd say our origin is Mars.
We're going back there.
So yeah. But after that, because if we do say DNA search, it's obvious. It's obvious that, say, we can easily distinguish between the contaminated terrestrial life and the Martian life, because when we draw these phylogenetic tree, we can tell where it's located, and all the terrestrial contamination be located on the end tip of the branch, whereas the Martian life should be branched like super deep. そこは大丈夫なんですけど、有機物の分析をするときに、あ、すごい、なんかある特定のアミノ酸とかがものすごく濃縮してエンリッチしてる、見つかった、やった、イエイ、これはマーシャンライフだって言った瞬間に、え、でもそれってこの前あのクルーが間違ってゴミ外に捨ててたけど、それじゃないのっていう。で、地球もそうなんですけど、地球って結構地球の反対側の例えば温泉同士で同じような生物が見つかることがよくあって、結構その全球的にこう飛び散ってるんですね、撒き散らされてる。
望月さんも言ってたよね。
Have you heard of the bacteria that eats it lives on uranium, and it's pretty much I think it's the only organism that's truly isolated from other.
Is that the one found in ecosystem. Like super deep? Like
it was in a mine in South Africa or something. They found it.
I think they're not directly using the uranium, but I think they're using the splitted water from the perhaps from the radiation. Yeah, once the water is split, then they can use like those like activated like electrons or like protons to to make a proton gradient in it. So they can couple those like high energy radiation derived molecule to their biological system. Yeah, I've actually heard about Chernobyl の跡地に黒いカビが生えてて there's a black fungi growing inside. And they're actually using the radiation as an energy source to activate one of their compounds inside their body.
It's crazy that that happens at the fungi level. And I've heard that spores are resistant to space, like cosmic radiation doesn't render them, what do you call it, infertile or whatever you call it. And so some people have said, well, there's no reason for it to have evolved this ability. They must have originated like on an asteroid or something. So what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, actually, my friend, who's a Kumamushi Hakase, he has a very nice hypothesis on that. So actually, most of the radiation, some of the radiation tolerance is related to desiccation resistance. So desiccation wa mizu o nuku, 乾燥耐性なんですけど, one of the cause, fatal cause made by radiation is when the radiation hits water and forms radical. あの、なんだっけな、活性酸素っていうのができちゃうんですね、水に当たると。なので、水を持ったまま放射線浴びると、もちろん直接DNAとかタンパクに当たると、ダメージを受けるけど、一番の問題、水がその割れて活性酸素みたいなものができて、 それが他のものを傷つけちゃう。で、デスケーションレジスト、あと要は乾燥耐性は、例えばクマムシの場合だと体から水を抜くんですね。で、体から水を抜くと何がいいかって、要はその、レイディエーション来ても、水がないから、そのリアクティブオクシジェンスピーシーズっていうのはできなくなって、で、ダメージがすごく減る。だから実はそれすごく関係してて、 で、堀川さんって言うんですけど、熊虫博士の堀川さんはこれを橋本聖子仮説って名前をつけていて、橋本聖子は夏と冬のオリンピック両方出ていて、冬はスピードスケートで、夏は、なんだっけな、堀川さん言ってた。夏はそっか、自転車か。競輪っていうか、自転車のレースをやっていて、要は一つの、なんだろう、乾燥耐性っていう耐性をゲットすると、それは放射線耐性にも応用できますよっていう。で、それ聞いて、ああ、なるほど、それはうまい例えだなと思ったんですけど。そうそう。だからスポアも一緒です。まあスポアの場合はDNAがすごくその小さくパッケージングされていて、当たる面積もちっちゃくなってるので、 そもそもDNAダメージが面積的にも少ない。だからそういうパッキング効果は結構あると思います。水はどれだけ、水も多分でもね、その分子に直接結合してる水外のフリーのウォーターは多分ほとんどないはず。だからその辺の多分コンビネーションで耐えてる。あとは純粋にたくさんのオーガニックレイヤーに守られてると、まあ我々も実はこのメラニン、 我々の皮膚がこう色がついてるのは色素のおかげで、色素はUV吸収してくれるんですね。だからそこで全部ブロックアウトしてる。Because our skin is actually mostly dead skin. It's a layer of dead cells.
So people are using these weird scrubs and exfoliating.
だから better not to.
Yeah. The dead skin is there for a reason, right?
So there for a reason.
赤すりとかね、スクラブとかでこそぎ落としちゃダメなんです。
Cosmic rays will get you.
赤すりした後に sunbathing
とかした。あ、もう一番最悪。一番ダメなやつだ。ダメなパターンかもしれない。
What do you think Mars will look like in
100 years?
Yeah, 50 years and then 100 years.
Yeah. I think we need to invite Elon Musk to ask whether, you know, he's already colonized it or not. But, well, I think the first thing will happen is, like, we'll probably have people going there and then doing some, like, initial studies and then bringing them back to Earth and, you know, going back and forth. And then besides that, we're going to have also sample return mission to Mars. So we'll have some samples brought back to Mars. And then I think the question is whether the, like, Planetary Protection Council allows human to start colonizing Mars or not. So Planetary Protection ってね、惑星保護の惑星権益のその今委員会みたいなのができつつあって、そこで決まると思うんですね。
なんかもともとガイドラインもありますよね。ガイドラインも、その水の近くには行っちゃいけないとか。そうそう、
だから本当に僕はね、as an astrologist, I really want to preserve as much a sample as possible before contaminating with our
biology. 手遅れになっちゃいますもんね、もう後から分かっても。
With the surging commercial space and all the excitement about Mars, it's going to be like, oh, everyone...Hold on, we can't go to Mars yet. This guy wants to look at some bacteria.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're going to have, like, it's not just going to be NASA. You know, if it's NASA and they have kind of this, they've made mistakes and they've learned a lot of things and they've established a lot of good, you know, operating guidelines for this sort of thing. But other organizations from other countries may not respect, like, oh, you just have this council that's saying we can't go.
Right.
And, you know, we could get to another, some kind of space race. I mean, if one country starts sending all the people to Mars, it's not like other countries are going to be like, oh, yeah, just keep doing that. As, you know, you guys can have Mars. That's not going to happen, right?
そうですね。いや、結構ね、ヨーロッパは割とあのコンサバティブで、あの、they're really serious about the planetary protection.
But that only leaves...
US? あの、なんかちょっと行きたそうね。
Well, U.S., China, Russia.
Well, the U.S. is shifting right now from more government-based science to commercial and human spaceflight.
Right.
Which is, it could be good for research in the long term, but there could be casualties.
Yeah, like, there could be casualties too. Yeah.So, but one thing I was talking to Murakami-san, he's the, なんか極地研究家, and he was one of the crews to actually undergo this Martian simulated, you know, なんていうの、なんか isolated.
ハワイのやつですか?
ハワイのやつかな? そうに行ってて、で、Murakami-san が言うには、やっぱりその、みんなイマジネーションはすごくあると。なんか火星に行きたいっていうモチベーションもすごくあるけど、本当に行って1週間過ごした後の気持ちまでは考えてない可能性がある。つまり実際に行った後にその後もしOh, damn, みたいな、行かなきゃよかったってどれぐらいの人が本当に思うか、寂しいのかっていうところ。だから本当、実は村上さんは今そのしらせっていうもう退役した砕氷船の中で火星の疑似模擬環境を作ってて、でそこで今そのいろんな人に実際に経験してもらうっていうのを始めたんですね。で多分その取り組みのいいところは、そのすごくワクワクする気持ちだけで行った時に実はすごいそのカジュアリティがあるんじゃないかと。そのワクワクが収まった後、本当にあなたは冷静にその現実に対処できますか、
だからまさにスティーブ・ブシェミみたいになっちゃうかもしれないもんね。その、確かに最初ワクワクしてるけど、ついてじゃあ3日経って4日経ってってなってきて落ち着いて、冷静に考えた時に急にフリークアウトしたりとか。
But I think そういう人 wouldn't even make it to Mars.
Mars.
Like they'll be on the ship and they'll be like,
but that's it, but it's too late already, right?
Well,
you're on the ship. もう帰れないよ。
You just vent them into the vacuum space.
捨てる?
Yeah. Before you get to Mars. Once you're at Mars, it's too late. They're going to cause problems.
そうね。Yeah, because one of the things I was thinking about is, なんかそういう人ってすごいそのパイオニアとか、その
こうエクストリームが大好きな人って見たことのない世界を見に行きたいじゃないですか、
うん、
で火星って見たことのない世界で多分最初はすごくエキサイティングだと思うんですね、うん、わあすごい、なんかもう本当に真っ赤で山があって、わあすごいすごいってなってて、で今日朝起きて2日目、あ今日もいいね火星にね1週間経って今日も赤い。
You're
it's
even
worse.
なんか土しかないみたいな。
But I think, I don't know what the habitat would look like necessarily, but they're not going to instantly have these like beautiful glass domes that you can look out of and stuff. I think initially you're either in some crappy little dome on the surface, but they're gonna have to move it either underground or they're gonna. Have you noticed that the boring company's tunnel drilling machine fits inside Starship?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I looked at the dimensions of both, and it barely fits. it fits though inside Starship, which is crazy.
It's crazy. But I really agree that we should build the habitat underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or if there's a mountain or some kind of cliff, then just drill into the side, right? Just drill a cave, and then you just build the door. That's all you build is the door. I mean, two doors. You need an airlock. But that's super cheap, right? Yeah. Two doors and you're done with your habitat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? I don't know about like how insulation works, but yeah. But
I guess. Yeah. It's really invasive, right? Like, 昔その熱帯雨林とかをガンガン伐採して、もうどんどん開拓して、でその時はそれを悪いことってもちろん思ってないし、何を失われてるか分かってなかったからやってたわけじゃないですか。で今になって失われたものがどれだけだったかっていうことに気づいて、ああもうこれからやめようね、もう手遅れになっちゃったって言ってるのに、他の惑星に行ってその山に穴を開けるっていうのは
just one
cave。 でも今なんだっけ、溶岩が流れた後があって、なんかケーブラーバケーブかがなんかあるみたいで、そこだったら天然でちゃんとアンダーグラウンドハビタビリティが確保できるんじゃないかなっていうのは言われてますね。
そうか、
うん、
局地研究家ででも面白いですね。
面白いんですよ村上さん。だから村上さんはそのなんか僕らのイメージだとその火星に行きたいのかなっていうふうに思ったんですけど、お会いして実は逆で、人間が人間としての限界があると、そういうつまりアイソレーティッドみたいな場所、いやそのアイソレーションとかそのマテリアルが、限られてるとか、常に同じ人と接しなきゃいけないっていう環境はもともと人間にとってはすごく要は違和感のある環境なので、そこをどう、克服するとしたらどう克服していくかっていう問題が一つありますね。まあでも実際そのなんだろう、我々、ね、今後体を例えば細胞化していったり、自分たちが実体としていかなくてもアバターを向こうに送ったりとか、行かないけど行ったような感覚になれるような多分テクノロジーっていうのは出てくるので、どこまでそれで満足できるかですよね。例えばその People want to go to space, want to see Earth like round Earth, but the question isWhether you want to go there by yourself or are you happy with all the VR and like the headset, you know, with looking down on Earth, like floating.
How do you feel?
I actually want to go. I want to bring my body up there.
Do you want to go to Mars too? Or? When it's ready?
If I can come back, yeah.
Right.
I don't want to actually live there, but I want to see it.Yeah. あの僕実は宇宙飛行士に応募したことがあって、I think it was almost 9 years ago I applied for astronaut exam っていうの試験。日本の JAXA の募集があって、でまだ学生だったんですけど、博士課程の学生で募集要項に応募しちゃダメって書いてあったんですけど、もう
行きたい。
でも僕自分で行って自分で火星で生命見つけたいって思ってたから、アプライして。したら一枚紙が返ってきて、あなたはそもそも
怒られる
基準を満たしていませんって書いてあったんで、まあ分かってましたけどって電話して、もしもし、あのいやもちろん重々分かった上で応募したので、
あすごい、
なんとかなりませんかって言ったら、
30分ぐらい粘って電話で、
うん、
で最後もう僕も感極まってもうこう涙ながらに受けさせてくださいって言ったらなんか向こうの人もなんかすごくかなんか泣いちゃって、
うん、
二人で泣きながらで後日なんかあの英語の試験受けてくださいっていう用紙が来て、うん、英語の試験までは受けさせてくれたんですけど、
うん、
そこでしっかり落とされました。
まあ、そうなんだ。でもすごい粘りがちみたいな
粘りがち負けみたいな。
You could still go.
Yeah, I could still go. But I, yeah.
It's like 2 years, I think. It's like 2 year shifts.
Yeah, but I feel like now I feel like if my project, like related space probe, like spacecraft can reach Mars or Enceladus, I'm actually fine with that. Yeah, if I can be involved with finding life on, you know, icy moon.
Is there a project that you're involved with that's going to send something?
Yeah, so currently I'm involved with
Enceladus,
yeah, sample return mission concept. It's still a concept. NASA nor like JAXA having an official like mission right now, but NASA is now preparing for the next like 10-year, like they call it decadal survey. なんか次の10年何やりますかっていうサーベイがあって、でそこにそのエンケラドスのライフミッションを入れましょうっていう話はしています。
Were they planning to send submarine or something to Enceladus?
No, not to Enceladus. I think that's to Titan.
Oh, Titan か。あ、そっかそっか。あれ、Enceladus のはあれですよね、あの吹き出してるやつをキャッチするってやつ。
そう、このまさに T シャツに描かれてるこのプルーム、吹き出してるプルームのいいところは海の水をそのままサンプリングできるんですね。だから if you do a flyby, you can actually collect the material from the seawater without landing and bring it back.
Cassini did something.
They did. Cassini actually did fly through the plume.
But that was I think that wasn't that an impromptu adjustment to the original mission plan.
Because they never thought the plume was coming out.
Yeah.
So they actually they had a mass spec、 そう、質量分析器って言って、どういう重さの分子があるかを調べる装置があって、それでこう突っ込ませたんですね。で、そうすると you get all these different peaks、and some of the peaks related to like CO2 とか、salt とか、あとはなんだろう、まあ、they found hydrogen, water、simple organics、だから結構いろいろ見つかって、なんか本当に 海のような成分、海水が
But there is no clear indication of life on Enceladus. Is there anything even suggesting that some biological process could be occurring?
That's a really nice question. Not yet. Well, one of the reasons is we don't have enough sample yet. And the mass spec, the 質量分析器の解像度, the resolution is not that good. So we can't actually separate...what molecule is what. だから the idea is actually send a high resolution mass spec and reanalyze what's coming out and look at the distribution. どういう分子がどれぐらいの濃度であるか。で、生命のいいところはなんか決まったものをたくさん作って回してるから、ある分子がすごくたくさん見つかる、そういうスパイキーなピークが出ると一つ面白いです。で、We know from the like what sort of organic compounds are expected from like meteorites とか、なんかあの、or なんだろう、水星、なんかそういう comets、なんかそういう宇宙でできる有機物のセットっていうのは持っていて、それと比較したときに、there's this like really weird like peak みたいな、なんかその、なんかそこに合わないようなものが出てくると一つ面白くて、my target is actually short chain of amino acid、ペプチドっていうんですけど、まあ、タンパク質を短くしたような、で、we use protein as a catalyst、触媒としてタンパク質を我々扱っていて、でそうするとその反応を促進させたり、ある一定の温度がないといかない反応も触媒があるとそこで反応を起こさせることができるんで、こういう触媒がもしエンセラダス生命が使ってるなら、短いそういうタンパク質のフラグメントとして検出されるんじゃないかなと思って、そういうものを捕まえに 行こうっていうコンセプトで今あの JAXA の人と研究してます。
Is that your aerogel?
The aerogel, yes.
あのさ見たよねケックに行った時に。
Yeah, we. I made the mistake of like just grabbing.
触ったんですな。すごい。
なんかあのどうぞ見ていいですよみたいなサンプルが置いてあって。
But,
面白かったよね。
Like, part of it like came off,
yeah.
right? And it was like, oh my god, I can't get it off my fingers.
Yeah,
it's like, what do I do?
そうなの。
どうしよう。
So I don't think I don't know if you should touch it. It's kind of weird.
あの実はガラスでできててシリカなんですね。
So
you can imagine like 瓦割りのイメージなんですけど、まあ元々なんでエアロゲル使いたいかっていうと軽くてすごくそのスパースなんですね。Mm. つまりすごく空撃率が高いので。なんか imagine this like super fast speed particle coming in, hit the aerogel. The aerogel starts to break apart and then gradually slows down the particle.
Without destroying,
without destroying
impact.
The impact. So だからすごく何千枚もの瓦割りをやるみたいなイメージで止まる、最後止まるんですけど、だから実はガラスでで、ガラスのマトリックスで、なので結構手にくっつくと思います。
ね、すごい不思議だった。
多分マイナスに帯電してるのかな。It's like negatively charged, so it's very
like
sticky.
Static.
Yeah, static.
Yeah. Such a weird,
really weird.
It's freaky light. Like you feel like your brain's not working. Like it's
ね、
not.
そう、
like something. It's like you're in VR or something. You pick something up, right?
Yeah. It's like 持ってんのか持ってないのか分かんないみたいな。
そうなんか目で見てると持ってるけど指はそれを感じてないぐらい軽さだからなんか混乱しちゃうんですよね頭が。
すごい変だったね。そのそれはど何年後ぐらいにできたらいいなとかそういうタイムライン的な。
そうですね、あの、まあ、ここだけの話なんですけど、まあ、だから、まあ、NASA は NASA でそういうのを、まあ、今後10年でやりましょう、
うん、
で、まあ、そこにアロゲルか乗るかどうかはまだわからない、
うん、
で一方で JAXA の方は JAXA の方で独自にやりたい。でこれはでも予算の問題があるので、まあ、小型の探査機衛星みたいなものに乗せてそういうプルームみたいなところに、を通過させて調べると、
うん、
なので今2つの可能性があって、で小型の方はやっぱり小さいのでなるべくそのなんだろう、そのエアロゲルを使うにしても限られたスペースでいかにうまくキャプチャーするかとかっていうのを考えて、で僕としてはまあもちろん今 JAXA の人とやってるから JAXA のお手伝い、JAXA のプロジェクトの一環としてこれできればいいし、でやるとしたら多分本当に10年以内に実現できるようにやりますし、
うん、
で NASA の方も10年以内ということで、多分ねエンケラドスのどっちに転んでも In 10 years we will probably have an official mission、life detection mission.
How long does it take to get there though? Because some of these missions are on like horrible trajectories that take like 15 years to get there.
So,
it's just the most depressing thing.
I was actually really surprised when I checked the distance. Like, the distance to Saturn is actually double the distance to Jupiter.
Yeah.
Jupiter
That's why they're not doing it,
right? じゃあどのぐらい時間かかるの行くのに？
だからこれまでの第三だと、あでもねそう7-8年はかかるって言ってたんですけど、でも今あのなんだっけ。ボーイングとロッキード・マーティンが作ってるスペース・ローンチ・システムっていう、なんかでっか
い
ロケット、高いロケットがあって、それだと you can bring heavy, you know, heavy stuff fast. だから maybe you can shrink the time to like say, I don't know, like 65
Did you see Elon Musk tweeted about this
about
in the last 2 days? Not about the SLS, but about sending a mission to the outer solar system to look for signs of life. And he specifically referenced microbial life and like the... I forget what he was responding to exactly, but he suggested that they use the BFR, now called Starship, and refuel it in orbit back to full and then just launch that thing straight out at when Saturn and Jupiter are close Lying. together, and he would send like 30 microsatellites in one launch.
I see.
And they would go to all of the places
like
at once.
Yeah.
And
Whoa.
And he was saying that the way these missions have been done is just taking too long. So he was saying, like, if you're impatient, this is how we should do it. It'll get there, you know, I don't know, way less than 10 years, just a couple years or something.
Yeah, I think that really makes sense because actually my colleague at Tokyo University, my friend at Tokyo University, he's actually a specialist of, Funase-san って言うんですけど、Funase-san はその超小型衛星の本当にスペシャリストで、それこそ本当にそういうなんか SLS とか大きいものに乗せて二次ペイロードでその探査用に使えるっていうコンセプトを出しているので、あの it totally makes sense. It doesn't need to be
well, Elon wants to do it, and the Starship after it's completed should cost $60 million or less, and then you could send 30 microsatellites to all these different destinations, and I mean that'sridiculously affordable, right? And it would get there, you know, before some of the missions that are going on right now, you know? So I don't understand why that's not already being planned. Like, that should be planned right now.
It's just so slow, isn't it?
It's too slow. And if we do it the other way, it takes 10 years for the thing to get there, and then if it doesn't work, you know, our heads will explode, you know? So...what do you think about the Europa Clipper and the ESA Jupiter Icy Moons missions?
Yeah, well, for the Europa Clipper, it has already been decided to be launched, so that's great. I mean, we don't know much about Europa yet, and it's nice to have an orbiter around Europa, and that orbiter will give us information, detailed information about the surface, and we know that the Europa surface is...how do you say, restructured, meaning that there's definitely like convection going, bringing new, raw, you know, fresh materials to the surface. だから、もしヨーロッパも中に海があるって言われてるんですけど、そこのマテリアルが来てるから、ひょっとしたら、そのフレッシュな、もしそこでね、なんか、ongoing、なんか、ヨーロッパバイオロジーがあれば、それがディテクタブルだから、あの、it's nice to,for the follow-up, like, lander mission. And actually, NASA was coming up with this lander, follow-up lander mission.
Cancelled.
But they cancelled it.
Yeah.
Why? Budget?
Budget.
That was probably the biggest casualty of the new NASA budget, is the loss of the Europa lander.
So, 本当はセットでやると、本当に綺麗なストーリーができた。
I'm thinking, like, cancel the Mars helicopter thing instead. I mean, I love helicopters and I love Mars. But...Come on. Aliens is way cooler than the Mars helicopter.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Because I feel like if you don't... I mean, they were landing like the Viking stuff way back in like the 70s on like Venus and stuff and taking samples. And now it's like, oh, we'll send this cheap orbiter. It'll take 10 years. Like, I mean, do you have this sense of like, why aren't we doing way more by now? Like if you look at the 70s and the 80s and all this stuff,
Yeah.
What's going on?
I think the main reason is because the money is spent for, kokubouhi, like a
military
budget. And I think that's the main reason. If we, for example, use half of those budgets...
That'd be a lot.
We're basically already, like, finished most of, like, you know, like moons and...
I mean, they should really do that. It's kind of it's becoming the same thing, huh? The space industry budget and military defense are kind of starting to become the same budget.
Yeah.
Which is good and it's bad.
It's kind of sad that, like, we're spending money to defend ourselves from killing each other.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
For having this...you know, intelligence, like being a human, and we're still like on this planet killing each other. That's like the most like ridiculous way of spending energy.
But only smart people think that.
Right. Well, so だからね、あの、the reason why I'm doing like life detection, the reason why I really want to find life in other places because I want to shift the focus of human being out there. だから目線をそっちに変えさせたい。だって、もし太陽系の中で生命見つけたら、それも間違いなく全世界のニュースになるし、で、そしたらみんなの目がそこに向くし、なんかちょっとでも多分みんなその時に
戦争も1日ぐらい分かんないけどね、
お休み
ちょっとお休みの日ができるかもしれない、
うん、
でそれがなんかのきっかけになって、ね、なんかあ俺たちって別に、ね、この宇宙で自分たちだけじゃないんだってなれば、
うん、
なんかその意識も変わるかなって、
ね、確かにこう自と他でやっぱりこう戦っちゃうから、他が他にいるってなってこれ全部自弾だってなれば、う
ん、So you want to kill aliens
Instead
We found a new enemy
でも確かにその大きい目で見ると宇宙のエクスプロレーションとディフェンス、ミリタリーディフェンスが共存してるって不思議な状態ですよね、うん、その他に目がいってるにもかかわらず未だにこっちもやってるっていう。そうだ、
結局宇宙に行った後に地球を見ることに使ってるんですよね、ほとんどその、うん、その衛星もそうだし通信もそうだけど、
うん、
ほとんど結局また自分たちの方を向くようなことに使ってるからもう少し外向いてもいいんじゃないかなと思って、例えば地球の周りって結構いろんなミニムーンって言うんですけど、スモールオブジェクトが飛んでくるんですよね、
うん、
そういうオブジェクトってやっぱり宇宙でリアルタイムでモニタリングしないと分からなくて、そこにはそういうレアメタルとかもいっぱいあるし、あの将来的な例えばムーンベースを作る時の資源になったりとか、
うん、
宇宙港を作る時のとかになるので、もっともっとなんだろうね、地球の周りのことに目をもっと向けていくような方にシフトして僕はいいと思うんだけどね、
うん、
まあ、What if it just becomesEarthlings versus Martian humans, like that becomes the new.
That's possible. Yeah,
that's possible.
Because the cultures start to develop so separately.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Well, but I don't think selected evolution will occur based on the Martian environment anymore because we're already controlling our own.Like, I think last week's podcast, ほら、クローンを作るって話、evolution stop してるよねって話してたと思うんですけど。もうそういうふうに例えば火星に送り込む人はある程度そこにアダプトできるように、うん、ジェネティクリーモディファイアブルにしちゃう、なんかそのもうモディファイしてあげてから送り込んじゃうようなことがもしあるとすると、うん、There wouldn't be any natural selection happening on Mars、
And the division could be even worse.
Division will be more, yeah.
Because、like if someone from Mars came to Earth, they'd experience some weird side effects、because they've been adapted、to Mars.
Yeah, if there's going to be like a new generation born on Mars, I don't think they can adapt to Earth's gravity.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Because Mars gravity is only half. だから絶対ね、もう地球重すぎて、わ、地球
つらい。もう無理。しかもそのやっぱさっきの金魚とかの話じゃないけど、結局火星に行く人っていうのは火星に行くような性質の人たち。なわけじゃないですか、例えば、まあ、アドベンチャーが好きとか、まあ、精神的に落ち着いてるとかなんか分かんないけど、似たような感じの人たちが行くことになって、それが何世代とか続いていくと、
ね、だからそこをコントロールするかもしれないですよね、誰を送るかっていうところも含めて、
ちょっと最近面白い感じの人足りないから、面白い人行きませんかとかってこと
そう、ね、なんか ダイバーシティを維持するように、無理やり
確保する、
I think maybe it'll mostly be self-selection though, you know, because you have to get yourself there, you have to work really hard, you have to prove yourself to some sort of approval process, so you have to we'll self-select ourYou know, no one's going to be forced to go to Mars, right? That would be ridiculous.
Right,
right, right.
Oh, like at the point where people can choose whether or not you can go to Mars ってことね。だからその段階まで行ったら、多分、ナチュラルセレクションになりますよね。そう、行きたいと思う人が行くようになるから。確かにね。
どうなるんだろう。いやでもね、
結構あの格差ができると思います。
So, because です
よね。We can go to Mars.The Mars gravity is totally fine for us, and it might be better for the elderly too. Like, なんかちょっと最近腰が曲がってってなった時に火星行ったら、
ピーみたいな、そうそう関節痛が治ったみたいな。
そうだ、実はすごく住みやすい、場合によっては住みやすい可能性もあって、でも火星で生まれた人は骨密度とか、the bone density とか、あのマッ
スル
とかが、あの地球のグラビティに耐えれないんじゃないかな。
そっか、
だから格差ですよね、それは片方 It's one way, it's like a one way
Yeah, once you're adapted, right? Or could there be I don't know There's no way to like make an organism that adapts in real time
If you can make an artificial gravity なんかこういう回転させて、そこで 1G を作れれば大丈夫、
どうなるんだろうね
I wanted to ask you about the red stains on Europa and what you think those are along the cracks.
はい、ありますね。あれはね、I think it's the brine. 塩だと思います。ソーディウムとか、あとは有機物の一部が、when they get radiated, they do get like, なんていうのかな。Maillard reaction じゃなくて、そういうふうにちょっと黒っぽく色がつく、化学反応があって、それはおそらくそういうラディエーションによるものなんですけど、なのであれは別に、life っていうか、it's more like an organic chemical reaction.
I heard some counterpoint to that, which was like, what was it? Like the exposure of Europa to that radiation is not evenly distributed on the planet. It's mostly on one side. And then we don't see that pattern in the red stains. So there's some people that are arguing that it isn't that process and it's something else because we would expect to see the distribution. But I don't remember the details exactly.
Yeah, then definitely it's beyond my knowledge. But I have a colleague at LC working on the mark on the Pluto, like why the Pluto have this like stain and the equator area. Yeah. And they actually did some simulation of like impact heating of these organic molecules, and then it actually did turn color red. So I don't know whether it's the same mechanism happening or probably different because it's more of a like a radiation or some different cause. But yeah, it's really hard to tell. Yeah, at this point,
do you think that they'll be able to tell the difference using the orbiter?
Yeah, if you get a spectrometry data, then you probably know what compounds are accumulated in that red region specifically. And it could be either organic spectrum or like salt, certain types of salt, or something else, something bizarre.
Oh, no.
Well, there's kind of been this, I don't know about debate, but tug of war between sending things to Europa, sending things to Titan, and sending things to Enceladus. And I think Enceladus used to be less interesting because it's so small. I don't think people realize how small Enceladus is. It's like a seventh the size of the moon or something.
Like, 直径500キロぐらいだから、イギリスがすっぽり収まるぐらいの。
That's crazy.
イギリスの上にポカンとこう丸いのが浮いてるのをイメージするというか。
And it's so small, but it has these hot oceans and these geysers. So it's such a unique world that we really wouldn't have considered if we hadn't seen the geysers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean,
you
have this like ocean out there, and people used to think ocean must be existing on the surface. And in order to get that ocean, liquid water, you need a certain distance from the sun, from the central star.
Yeah.
But now it's not the case. So now we call it deep habitat. So it's like it's deep out there in the outer solar system, but it might be still habitable,
Right.
Yeah, the
habitable.
Jupiter is almost its sun. Right, because that's where it
Saturn.
Gets the, or yeah, Saturn is almost its sun because that's where the, the gravitational pull that's creating that energy is coming from, and so it's very distinct from the sort of residual heat from formation that like the Earth has or Mars may have to some extent.
Yeah, it's actually a combination of all. So there are some like residual heat.
From its formation
from the
period?
Formation, plus there's this like radioactive decay, like these radioactive materials decaying and causing heat. Plus there's these like water rock interaction called serpentinization. なんかジャモン岩化反応って言うんですけど、
ジャモン岩
化反応っていうなんかセルペンティ、そう蛇のようなこう模様が出るようなまあ地球のマントル。のコアのマントルの成分とエンセラダス その中心のコアの岩石両方ともそのコンドライトが主成分なので観覧石っていうのでできていて、観覧石が水と反応すると実はその水素も出すんですけど熱も出ます。だそういうセルペンティナイゼーションに伴う熱、でもマイケルが言ったように一番のメインのヒートはそのタイドルなんかフリクション、潮汐摩擦によって起きる。あとはもう一つあった、
軌道交差って言って、その今の軌道に入る前のにこう他の衛星とかと軌道がクロスオーバーするときに、そこですごい引っ張られて、熱を受け取るっていうのもあって、うん、でだからいつからあの海があるかとか、
うんうん、
まあ、おそらく、まあ、昔からあって今なお残ってるっていうのが今のコンセンサスなんですけど、
うん、
そうそう、あんまりそこまで熱々になったことがない過去にとは言われてますね、
うん、
でコアもすごくポーラス、すごくねちっちゃい、こう今ちっちゃいっつうんで大きい1個の1枚岩じゃないっていう意味で、
うん、
なんかこう岩がより集まってる、うん、感じ。
Is it possible to land something on the surface of Enceladus?
そうですね。どうだろう。結構なブレーキをかけないといけないみたいですね。その、mm. if you think about, because you want to bring your probe like quick, you know, fast as possible,、
mm-hmm.
you're going to speed this probe up to like say 6 kilometers per second、
mm-hmm.
once you're in the Saturn orbit.、Mm-hmm. 土星の軌道に入ると多分ね、6キロとか7キロとかパーセカンド。めちゃくちゃ速いんですけど。
めちゃくちゃ速い。
なんだろう、マッハ18とか、そんなスピードで行ってるやつを、そのエンケラドスの軌道に入れるためにものすごいブレーキかけなきゃいけなくて、その時の多分燃料が結構大変。
ああ、そっか。
めちゃくちゃ時間かけていいんだったら、それこそね、そういうあのイオンエンジンみたいなのでゆっくりゆっくりスローダウンするのはできるかもしれないけど、ちょっと It's not within our lifetime.
if we could break, do the breaking part somehow.
And then we can, yes. Then we will be in theEnceladus orbit.
And we could lower a lander.
Yep.
And there's nothing about the surface that's going to like obliterate the lander.
As long as we avoid the plume.
ね、だってシューってなっちゃったら飛ばされちゃうってこと。せっかく行っても。
You want to get close though, right? To the plume. Isn't that's the best sample?
Yeah, so actually, the promotion video that we made, this is a simulation. So this is the view.If you land on Enceladus, you will see this.
すごすぎるよね。
そうそう。見たいよね。
見たい。
Yes.
なんか本当にあるっていうのが信じられない。
Yeah. So that visual will be so powerful to see these geysers.
だって、shooting up to 200km まで。
どういうこと？
Does it? It keeps going after 200km.
It's just. で、最後なんか A リングっていうリングになるね、あれ。土星のリングの一個になっちゃう。を作ってる。イジェクターが、
wow.
あの一番外に E リングっていうリングがあって ABCD、mm-hmm. The E ring is actually
made
of the Enceladus plume because it's on the orbital of Enceladus. Enceladus のオービットに E リングがあって
、 So the E doesn't stand for Enceladus.
そう、just
た
またま、
すごいすごい、
確かたまたま、
わざとみたい、
そうそう、
そっか、
だから実は E リングを取りに行ってもいいんじゃないかっていう話もあって、別にここにギリギリまでフライバイしなくても、でも E リングの場合は粒がちっちゃいから、本当に欲しいなんかこう有機物たっぷりみたいなものがそこにあるかどうかは
分かんない。いや、そっか。
Even if you sampled that and you didn't find something, you might be like, well, if we sampled theThe geyser.
The geyser.
Right?
そうだね。
Then we have to do another.
あと、あの、many of the large particles actually fall back on Enceladus. Like snows on Enceladus. So the lander will be ideal if you can land a lander and then just collect fresh snow.
確かに。
And you would need a nuclear power source that far out, yeah.
そうですね。まあ、うん、まあ、はい。ニュークリアパワーリアクター使って、なんだっけ、熱電変換か、thermal electro couple して、っていう感じですね。あの、just like Curiosity rover、
yeah.
日本でそれを打ち上げるのはね、結構規制上の問題で至難だと思う。
right.
Do you think, are you optimistic about the future of Japan and the space industry?
うん、あの、僕も結構知り合いがそのニュースペースって言って、あの、新しい宇宙事業をいろいろやってるんですけど、あの、本当に今流れが来てます。特にビジネス方面で、 JAXA も結構今民間と連携してこう新しい、そう、イノベーティブなことしようって言って、例えばそのスペースフードとか、その宇宙での食を考えましょうとか、あとはあの、そのトランスポーテーション、その今はエアラインだけど、そのスペースラインみたいな、 なんかその traveling from one place to the other within an hour とか、
イーロンも言ってるよね。
そうそう。
Is anyone working on a reusable rocket in Japan?
So not I don't know any company that actually made that happen yet, but I know JAXA, even before Elon, they actually invented this なんか reusable rocket、
mm-hmm.
なんだっけ観光丸っていうんですけど、
mm-hmm.
なんかこういうポッド型で打ち上げてちゃんとそのまま着陸する。だからしかも、mm-hmm. あの外れるやつじゃないから It's not like a booster
Mm-hmm.
itself is a rocket, so you can actually launch and then just simply land as is.
Mm.
So mm-hmm. it's actually really ideal to use that for like travel
mm-hmm.
because you can then like land and then refuel mm-hmm. it and then launch again. So it's like a なんていうの多段式じゃない一段式。
Mm.
But that idea is not active, right? That.
So that far, that technology has not been transferred to the industry yet, but maybe. If it will, then it's going to be very exciting.
They would probably need a boost stage.
Ah, right? Boost stage なくても大丈夫みたいです。Because most of the part is actually engine.
Huh.
So there...then you can have whatever payload on top.
Huh.
And this payload could be like, you know, you can carry people if you want.
But the payload to orbit seems to suffer a lot if you carry the whole spaceship up.
Orbit is difficult. But if you think about like travel, like spaceline travel, I know, like say connecting Tokyo, New York in an hour, you only need 100 kilometer height-wise. だからできると思う。
But like...For science and stuff in space, that wouldn't...
So, science in space, it wouldn't be that useful. Yeah, it wouldn't be that useful.
Do you buy this concept of the entropic heat death of the universe?
そうね。だから、I do buy it because...
Thermodynamics.
Well, life is going against that, right?
Yeah.
Because we're basically collecting energy from the environment and maintaining this whole complex, you know, structure. So, from the universe perspective, we are really in a weird thing because this entity is going against thermodynamics. And then, but if you look at the universe as a whole...The whole energy, like, you know, 収支 plus minus は、ね、equal でしょ。だから、it'll eventually, the space will be eventually cool down and die, and you get all these, like, diamond stars all around. Because I think one third of the star ended up as, like, a 白色矮星 And 白色矮星 is actually a diamond. It's, like, mostly carbon. So you have this gigantic diamond out there.
Sparkles.
It's weird to think...Like, as we move towards this entropic heat death, we can see that the complexity of the universe is being maximized and that life is capable of doing more and more complex things. The way we think about the cosmos now is that life is not going to have any effect on how the universe will evolve. There aren't really cosmological models that say, like, life is going to do this and that's going to change the nature of the universe, right?
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to have an impact as, a, you know, as life on the outcome of the, you know, or the evolution of the universe itself. But actually, life is already having a lot of impact on the evolution of our planet. So, for example...The rise of the oxygen is a good example. We totally changed the condition previously in the past.
Why can't you extend that out to the cosmos? If there's life everywhere and if they're intelligent, if they're in silicon form especially, there's nothing to prevent them from converting most of the universe into something else.
Right. Well, that's true. Yeah, I haven't thought even further. Yeah, I haven't thought...to that level, but you're right, because...
And its intent would be to conserve
the
established complexity, record everything, essentially.
Yeah, because, who was it, like, Freeman Dyson was talking about this, 何だっけ? 大損球, like surrounding the central star and using all the energy that are coming out. You know, maybe there could be some sort of intelligent life doing that.
Right.
And but if the sun dies out, then where can you get the energy from? And the answer is probably if we are capable to start using the energy from the gravity, then the black hole will start becoming the energy scavenger source. So dakara, tabun sono energy o toridaseru tokoro wa tabun tsuneni aru atte sono kibo ga dondon kawatteku dake nano kamoshirenai ne seibutsu ni totte wa. So it's going to be like universe or life mitai ni naru no kana saigo.
Right? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, it's going to be like universe or life.
Yeah, and life is kind of opposing this this inherent entropic nature of the universe.
Right.
And I wouldn't bet against us because I'm constantly astounded by the things that are being invented and people are coming up with.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are so many artificial intelligences or whatever they are in the cosmos, it just seems like, I mean, we have just non-living matter just sitting there waiting to be manipulated. It's just and the rate at which you know some kind of general super intelligence would operate and be able to convert things into organization would make us look like a total joke. We haven't even started. We haven't started at all.
Right.
確かにね、マイケルの言うことね、すごい面白い。つまり結局は全ての宇宙にあるマテリアルのほとんどが生物の一部としてあるいは生命活動の一部に取り込まれると。でもそれはそうかもね、僕もそう思う。じゃあ最後はユニバースとライフがほぼ nearly equal になる、 ってこと。
I don't know how to so we have this neat word entropy to describe you know the way the universe naturally wants to become more chaotic and sort of diffuse. But we don't have a word for what's happening on the other side, really. This emerging complexity that's compounding. And I don't know what role consciousness plays in it, or, you know, I mean, your RNA has complexified itself to the point where now it is looking through you at where it came from. And it's like, well, what's that? You know?
Yeah. And, it's crazy.
It's crazy.
And, I just think we're wrong about the future of the cosmos. And I have pretty much no scientific basis for thinking that, except this trend I observe, I guess.
Well, yeah. So going back to this, you know, the story of these polymers, the only reason we're using polymers to like either transfer information or make catalysts, and catalyst is to overcome the thermodynamic barrier.
Yeah.
So life, basically, chemical evolution is kind of like shifted in a way to, come against thermodynamics.
Yeah.
So 不思議ですよね。
Yeah. And we're, you know, that's like the, in the matrix, they're going to use our body heat. You know, we are very thermodynamic beings, and we use energy a lot to convert matter into organized matter. You know, all the little transistors and stuff in our machines, all this stuff is just organized, and it doesn't matter what silicon we make it out of. It's it's just the information that we care about.
Yeah.
And genes and DNA is that exact game, and I think language is that exact same game. And it's all like the same thing, and it's all like continuous from the beginning.
And never stopped.
What's
really bizarre about life is the lineage that brought all the way to us never got extinct. I mean many branches did extinct. This like main like branch that led all the way to us from this Luca never stopped.
I always that's why think we're here. About it. When after I gave birth, I look at my son and it's like none of our ancestors, like they could have gotten killed before making a baby or they could have died when they were babies and that would have been it, but it didn't happen and it survived until now to my son, and that's pretty insane when I think about it.
And you have this biological drive that has been evolved over, you know, millions of years to sustain that and to preserve all the complexity that we have and teach your kid everything that you can teach them, to find a good partner, you know, to make a good kid and all this. It's just, it's the most inherited, like the oldest legacy. Right? It's like having a kid. It's like the oldest thing you can do.
And it's weird because I feel like the modern society kind of not underestimated, but you know what I mean? It's like now we have, you know, a lot of lifestyles and people should do whatever they want to do. But it's kind of like there are people who don't want to have kids and who want to focus on career and not take care of their children. They can just hire a babysitter and daycare and that kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, you know, like good old, like raising children at home, like that's kind of lame, みたいな感じになってるけど, よくよく考えたら, なんか this is, for me at least, this, なんか,
It's just the information that's important. So even if the kid is not you, it still has that information. And as DNA becomes less important, you know, people's legacies can be in other forms, digital, you know, you can be a rock star or something and you don't need to, you know, raise kids in some old-fashioned way. It's just like, if no one remembered any of your stories and you never posted anything on Facebook and this was like 3,000 years ago, how do you have a legacy without having a kid? They're the only one that can pass down your stories.
まあ、その逆に言うとお年寄りを大事にしましょうみたいなのもそうね。そのお年寄りの言うことは絶対みたいなだったわけじゃん、昔は。だから情報を持ってるのはその人たちだから、全部ちゃんと聞いとかないと、その人たちが死ぬ前にインフォメーションを受け継いでおかないとっていうのがあって、まあ今ね、そういうわけでもないけど。